We opened two safes back to back. We took $1.5 million each. It's $3 million in diamonds and sapphires and jewelry. It's amazing.
Your father was basically a jewel thief. He and your mother were a team, and started the original group that was considered the Pink Panthers. Like, at what point do you start getting involved in this whole thing?
Yeah, me more when I was younger, like 5, 6, 7, 8. My father's friends, he's like, hey, you want to learn how to pick a lock? So he shows me a lock, you know, and I'm like, you know, 6, 7 years old. I'm like, of course. So you show me how to pick a lock at 6, 7, 8. And I got interested. He gave me my first pick lock, you know, my set.
Right.
And he'd show me one, you know, what to pick, how to pick it, what barrel to choose, and, you know, what to click and what to turn and the tension bar and all that. So I figured it out. I figured he showed me the inside, the mechanics of the system, you know. And he's the guy that I used to go to when I needed something like, you know, something, information about a safe, you know, how to open it, you know, because every safe is different. There's hundreds of safes. So, I mean, I can name them. I can name probably 20, 30 off the top of my head, you know, because, you know, this is what I do, right? Guys like me, I go to the conventions, I go to the locksmith shows, but we had something better. This is going to interest people to dive into our story, into Stealing Manhattan, because we had the biggest safe guy working with us.
Right.
In the fucking world. The biggest safe guy, the guy that owns the biggest, best safes in the world, is working with us. How crazy is that? That's going to come out in part two. But do you understand the magnitude of this? The guy that builds the safes, that sells the safes to the companies that need to be insured for $100 million works with us.
Right.
He comes to us. He comes to my father. He's like, this fucking cocksucker motherfucker didn't pay us. He didn't want to pay us for the vault. This cheap fucking money. I'm sorry for cursing, but you know, this guy, Bulger, he'd come. Oh yeah, we can curse on this show?
Yeah, of course.
Excellent. Oh, fuck it then. Let's go. What I mean is he comes into to our company. We have a jewelry company, an office on 47th Street.
Right. You had said that's how you guys were, I guess not
breaking fencing. Through.
Right. You were reselling the diamonds through your
and
parents.
Reselling. Yes. Yes. Look, watch this, Matt. The office was not only a place where we fenced the stuff, but it was also a point where I can get into the backyard at nighttime.
Right.
Because, okay, let me explain something to you. These are all buildings on 47th Street.
They're
if
what?
I can get into the backyard, 47th Street, the Diamond District.
Right. What did you say? They're what?
Buildings.
Oh, buildings. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Tall buildings. I think like 5 stories and up. 5 stories is the smallest, right? And I'm in one of these buildings that are 5 stories. And I go to the roof of this building, and that's how I break out to the backyard. And if I'm in the back, you're not supposed to be in the backyard of 47th Street. If I can get into the backyard, this is the nucleus of 47th Street and 48th Street, these two streets. So now I'm inside of these blocks where there's nobody. It's only air conditioning units, electrical, you know, things, gizmos, you know, stuff for that they have for the building, you know? And it's very dangerous back there. It's not made for people to walk, you know, it's not made, it's a backyard. I have to describe it a little bit better. We need to get some pictures because this diagram is in Manhattan, you know? So picture Rockefeller Center, right? The block next to Rockefeller Center, that street right there. And there's hundreds of jewelry diamond stores, okay? Hundreds. Each store is worth, you know, $1 million, 10 million, 5 million, you know, each one of these. Each one of these companies has a value. And this is where we broke in, into this nucleus, this stem. It's like we found, you know, when you find a diamond mine or a gold vein or something, there you go. We found a vein, a golden mine on these streets. And I was the only one that was going out at nighttime, you know, looking through the windows of these companies. And I would immediately see a punch safe, the safe that I could open in 16 seconds. So Matt, you think I wouldn't do it immediately? You don't think I would stretch those bars? You know, if there's any bars on the window, I would use a jack, like a BMW car jack, and I would stretch the bars. And then I would open the window with a screwdriver, heavy duty screwdriver, a crowbar, you know, and the alarms would be running. The alarms would be running. These guys are not going to get there in 5 minutes. I'm in and out in a minute.
Right. And this is in a residential area, so nobody's going to come out of the house.
No, it's not a residential area. It's a commercial area. That's what I forgot to tell you. It's all commercial. There's no residents. Nobody lives there. It's a desert. Desolate. Nobody lives on these streets. This is all commercial.
So when was your first heist? When did you first get, you know?
I was like 15 years old. 15. I became a multi. I made $1 million. My first heist. So I became a millionaire officially like 15 years old.
How did that work? How'd you find the place? How'd you?
Yeah. This was something that I was already, my father and I, we already spoke about what I was going to do. And he wanted to put me down on one of his jobs, you know, to work with his guys. And I was like, all right, let's do that. My mom was totally adamant, that, you know, she didn't want me to be with these guys. Something could happen. I could wind up in jail. I can get killed. You know, I could be in a trunk of a car. Who the fuck knows? Anything. This life is crazy.
Right.
You're dealing with psychopaths and you're dealing with crazy people, you know, in this world, right? You know, so she was scared and she says, let me show you something. Come with me, you know, to New York, to the city. I was living at that time in New Jersey. Okay. So my mom takes me to New York City. And, you know, I go with her and she's in a mink coat, you know, always in a mink coat, beautiful blonde, green eyes, like gorgeous, gorgeous woman. And here am I, you know, this young 15-year-old, you know, sprouting, you know, I'm playing tennis, good looking kid, you know, nice everything, you know, and I'm there with my mom. And that truly puts people at ease because we're not criminals.
Right.
So we can go anywhere. So I go to this company and it's an Indian company. My mom goes there to buy some gems. And she didn't say anything to me. She just showed me this place. She already knew what I was thinking. So as soon as I went there, because I was already scoping out jobs for my dad, I was already going with my mom, you know, and that's what I was doing probably, yeah, for like, as soon as I came back from Europe, 15. So this is like maybe like 5-6 months later, you know, down the road, because I didn't get to do what I wanted. So like 5-6 months later, so I'm like 15 and a half. But during that time, because I just came back from Europe, we just moved back from Europe and we moved to New Jersey. So from New Jersey, we're going to New York. And during this time, I was helping my mom scope out jobs. It was easier for her to go, you know, with me, us together. So my mom was showing me the district and that's how I got familiar with 47th Street. They had an office there, not one. They had six offices at one time, six different offices. So like 2-3 on 47th Street, one on 46th Street, one on 45th, one on 48th or something, you know. So these were all offices that we used not to resell out of, but to use to burglarize, you know, to steal from other commercial companies. Okay, right. So that whole district is commercial. I was the only one that would stay there overnight. I would sleep in my office. Okay, I would stay there, and at night I would go out and I would know where every cockroach would sleep because I'm the only one that knows that terrain. Nobody knew that terrain better than me. That's why, you see, this is why I did like over 300 heists in my life, because I was not only doing my crews, I was working with Albanians, I was working with Italians, I was working with everybody, Russians, whoever wanted to do a heist, they needed me to get into the 47th Street.
So they the first heist? Me.
Yeah, the first heist was India Gem Company. India Gem Company, and it was like 45th, between 45th and 46th Street. And I do it with this guy named Peko, another guy, young guy, that was in college, a professional soccer player. And he was a good athlete. My father puts this crew together. It was just us four. That's it. And I do this job. It was pretty heavy because there were stones. And I had to go back and forth like, you know, 2-3 times, you know, and the cops got involved.
How'd you get into the place?
Oh, through one of the offices that we had keys. We had keys. This was a different office. but we had keys to the front
adjacent
building.
Office, the one next to it.
Yeah, no. Well, we got into the backyard from 46th Street. Okay, and from 46th Street, this is like the way we go in and go out. This is our exit and entry point. This is maybe like 15 buildings down. This is 15 buildings, 20 buildings down. So it's in the middle of the block. This is where I leave. This is where I come out. And this is where I go in. Now, I have to make my way all the way to Fifth Avenue. I'm between Fifth and Sixth Avenue, 45th and 46th Street. So I'm in this backyard, and I have to make my way to the building that I entered into a window, like a bathroom window. And I opened the window, and I got into the hallway, interior staircase, and I got up to the top floor where the India Gem place was. And next door, there was an empty office. And I opened the door because there was no alarms in an empty office. And I immediately started making a hole in the sheetrock to the adjacent place next door, you know, to the India Star Gem. And we made a hole. And the hole that I made, actually, I put my head, I made a hole in their showcase because there was glass, you know, like, and I was like, oh shit, but there was gems and stuff there. So I started pulling out the emeralds and shit, you know, already loading up the bags. And then I moved this a lot, of, you know, it was messy. My first one was messy. I'm over there, you know, I'm scooping all these gems and stuff out the showcase. And I moved the showcase. It was messy. It's my first heist. You know, it's not, it doesn't look glamorous or anything like that. A lot of messy glasses broken. I probably got cut, you know. Like, you know, things are happening. You know, I got my tools and shit, you know, with this other kid, Pico. But I'm the one that's doing it. Like, I'm the one that's working. I opened the hole. You know, he started opening the hole with a hammer. Like, very messy, very, you know, sheetrock. It's all over the place. I don't know if it was 2x4s or whatever, but you got to, you know, move the, you know, get to the other side and stuff like that. And I put my head in the showcase, right? So it's messy. You know, we had to kick that out, and it's just like a lot of dust, and it looks like demolition basically. Right.
Right.
So, you know, I run right to the vault. There's a vault. It's like a door with a dial and a handle. And I already knew that because I seen it, you know, a couple of days before. Right. And, when I was playing it, and I immediately put the punch, I take the hammer, I open the vault, and this is a walk-in vault. And it was within 16 seconds, 17 seconds, I was in. One day, maybe we can do an episode about, you know, I can demonstrate to you exactly what I did, because it's exciting, you know, how I open a fucking vault, right? And I'm not promoting crime or anything. I don't want people to, you know, to imitate me or to redo this or whatever. But, you know, yeah. So I opened the vault, and it's the most amazing feeling in the world. This is my first vault. You know, I open it, my first heist. And it went so smooth. This is why my name is Punch, because it was a punch vault.
Right.
You know? And I opened this, and as I said, it wasn't diamonds. No. It was more semi-precious. Aquamarine, citrine, peridot, blue topaz, amethyst, tons of that shit. And really nice ones. Purple amethyst, you know, African amethyst. So we're picking rocks. So, you know, we load up 2-3 bags each, you know, as many as we can carry. I think I had 2 bags at that time. And the way I do it is I put it around my neck, the handle part, and I open it like this, and I'm dumping. I'm dumping everything out of the safe, you know, out of the vault. And everything is in like these little containers and shit, packets. And then when we're taking, you know, gems, we're taking gems. And he's looking at me and he's like, is this worth a lot? And I'm like, fuck yeah. I thought we were taking $100 million, you know, just think about it, because, you know, I thought it was all mostly rubies, and sapphires and diamonds, you know, but it was like maybe 15% of that. And then, you know, the rest was all semi-precious, but that's how we started Gemstones Trading. So here we are with 6 big duffel bags filled with gems. And we have a company on 45 West 47th Street that's a perfect front for this merchandise, because we already had a company on 33 West 47th Street in Ali's Exchange, and we kept that, and we get this other office, and this is what starts part two and this whole excitement and this whole the $1 billion heist and all that started from there, because we had this gemstone straight in front, and we started with that merchandise from my first heist. You know, it came from me, not my dad. It came from me, and my mom and dad started selling, and me also. You know, I started selling gems to all the manufacturers on 47th Street. And that was my first heist. My second heist was probably like 7 months after that, you know. But I was doing other things, assisting people with their heists. You know, I was working other jobs. But I wasn't actually, you know, until like 6-7 months later, because I had all this money. And I had a fight with my dad. I tried to give some gifts to my girlfriend, you know, and he wasn't having it. You know, he was like, no. And I couldn't get the money from my father, basically, because I was still a young punk kid, right?
Right.
And I'm living at home, so now I move out. Now I'm on the run. I'm on the run, you know? And I'm on the run, and I'm in New York City. And I'm in Manhattan now. I leave. I have a fight with my dad. That's why I didn't do a heist for like 6-7 months, because my dad and I, we had a fight because I couldn't get paid. I'm like, can I get my equal share like everybody else is getting?
Right.
He's like, fuck no. He's like, you're a fucking 15-year-old kid. What the fuck are you going to do with millions of dollars? Are you fucking stupid?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're going to fucking bury us all? Like, you know, he's like, what are you going to buy, a fucking Ferrari? Like, what was wrong with you? You know, he wanted low-key. Me, I wanted to show off. I wanted to be somebody with my friends, you know, and hey, look what I did. So I had all a bunch of these, you know, these guys from South Hackensack. It's like Sopranos and shit, you know, growing up in that area. And they were doing credit card fraud back then, you know. So I was like, I'm already a criminal. I do fucking gem heists. But they didn't believe me, you know. That's something that people can't fucking fathom until you get arrested, right? You know, so there you go. I started getting arrested, and I started becoming a real criminal. And I started going against my dad. Me and my dad were like enemies at one point. I had my own crew, and we wanted to kill each other. Yeah, like really, like we were really, like he had my money, you know, and I had this guy that was influencing me, a really bad character in the book. His name is Momo, and he brainwashed me to go against my father, and it's like, a fucking crazy story, man. And this guy kidnapped me and all this shit, but you know, yeah. So I broke away from my crew, from my father's crew, and I go with this guy Momo, and we're just going crazy, you know, doing heist.
How old were you then?
Robbing. I was 17, 18, yeah, with this fucking guy. And he was a gangster, you know, he was somebody that people like looked up to. My father pulled him in when he had problems, and he was in my house, you know, like before I went to Switzerland to school and stuff like that. And he was just a bad influence. And, you know, he was like, you know, he made me go against my father. Basically. He's like, go get your fucking money. Tell your father you want your shit. Don't let your father, you know, I thought the grass was greener on the other side.
Right.
And family's always the best. You know, they always have the best intentions, but I didn't understand that back then because I was a kid doing heist, and I'm thinking that, hey, I brought you this money. You know, I brought you these millions. I mean, it's millions of dollars, because if you resell it, you know, imagine, you know, we're getting full fucking retail for this shit.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, you understand what I'm saying? I'm paying the criminals that are working with me. I'm giving them peanuts. You know, they're getting 20, 30,000, 50,000, you know, whatever. But we're making all the money. So all the heists that have been happening that were going on, like it all goes to my dad, it all goes to us, and we sell it all, you know. But that my first heist was exciting. That it's enough to do one movie just from that one heist, you know. So I had a lot of like beef with my dad. Me and my dad were, you know, bumping heads, man, you know.
So yeah. What happened with this guy that you said you went off with when you were roughly 17, 18 years old? You what were you guys doing? Same thing or smaller heists? Like, how were those working?
No, we were stealing heists from my dad, and like, we were scumbags. Yeah. We were fucking like we were bad, really bad. Like, we were the bad version of what things were going on, because we, you know, we used guns. We, you know, this guy would hurt people. He used violence. He, you know, he's just a bad character. And I didn't know what I was getting myself involved, because I was a young kid, you know? Yeah. 17, man. You know, I just turned 16, 17. Yeah. Yeah. 17, 18. Yeah. 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 He was like, you know, like, remember I told you I didn't do drugs or anything until I was like 23.
Right.
He was heavily in drugs. He was involved, you know, with cocaine, with stuff. I used to see everything, but I never did it, you know? And he was just a bad influence, you know, a bad influence. So, you know, I started, I left my family. I left my dad. I left to be with this fucking person, right? And we're running around doing scores and robbing drug dealers and all the scumbag shit. Like, he was a scumbag criminal. He was nobody. My father made him into somebody, you know? So he was a purse snatcher from California, basically. You know what I mean? You know, in and out of LA County Jail and stuff. Like, you could imagine, you know, a thug, you know? So my father kicked him out the crew, and it was bad. It was bad because he didn't like that, you know? My father threw him out like a piece of garbage that he was, you know? And he didn't have any respect. He didn't have any respect for us, so...
So how long did that go on before you went kind of got back in with your dad's crew?
Not long. Not long at all. He had disappeared on us, this guy, because everybody was looking for him. Everybody wanted to fucking whack him. You know, they wanted to fucking kill this guy because he was so bad. Not just me. It was everybody, you know. So he was like a ghost. He would come in town, do a heist, leave again. But what happened is he kidnapped me. He kidnapped me. I did a heist with these two other kids, these two other guys I put down, and he walked in the door when we were splitting the goods. I couldn't believe it. You know, it was like, it was like a movie. You know, but before that, he punches me in the face. I forgot to tell you this shit. Holy fuck! Before that, yeah, this is the big fallout. He says, "I want your son to come to Panarella's restaurant." He tells my father. My father's like, "Why?" Because your son robbed me. He said that I robbed him, a truck full of silver. But what he did was he actually robbed my father and his friend Radosh in New Jersey. And he went, he knew that this guy was in Europe, but in the guy's, garage? Was like $1.5 million worth of silver, coins. You need a truck. You need a whole truck, a van to move all this shit. It was this coin heist that we just did. All silver coins, Morgans, you know what I'm talking about? Silver American Americana coins, like the big, right. You know, yeah. So it was a whole, this guy's cut. He had my father's cut, his cut, and like three cuts there, three parts, right? So Momo, this bad guy, he learned about where this was stashed. He knew that he was in Europe, and he knew that his girlfriend was there alone. So what he does, he comes there with a bunch of Albanian guys, with a truck, right? With a white truck, a big white pack wagon, like a big, you know, big truck. And he goes to the wife and he scares the shit out of her. Says, "Hey, Mr. Stan got busted by the FBI. Everybody's in jail. They're going to look for your husband. I came here to get the shit out the garage." He knew to say that. And she immediately opened the garage and he fucking took all the fucking $1.5 million worth of silver. My father doesn't know this. Rados doesn't know. Nobody fucking knows. And he calls my father back saying that I stole the silver from him, that he stole.
But the wife, like a wife knew he did it, right?
Yeah. She said Momo came here and picked up the silver, but my father thought that I was involved.
Oh, okay.
He put my name in it like I was involved because he said, "Your son stole it. He was my partner. He told me about this and I screwed him and it was just not true." You know, he just used my name. So he's like, "I want to see your son in Panarella's." And of course, I'm going to come. And so when I came there, but what he did was he didn't want to pay those three Albanian guys that he was with. So he had somebody steal the truck. Like they sat down to a restaurant, at a restaurant, Montezuma's, and the truck was parked like where you can see it. But you can't run to it because it's too far, right?
Right.
And there was this guy with a hat, right? in a hoodie or whatever that got in and just drove away. And they were like, oh, who's fucking driving away with the truck? And they're like, it's fucking Punch. Motherfucker, it's Punch. So Mama was saying, it's me. So now I drove away with $1.5 million worth of silver, and these Albanians need their cut. You know, bad Albanians. Albanians, bad fucking, they're like murderers, you know, so you don't have any parts with these guys.
Right.
So remember, Momo is a persona non grata. He has no ground to walk on. So he's using all the bad elements in New York, all these bad people to attach himself to because of who he was and who he ran with. And he's like, yeah, I'll get you paid. Just come with me, hold me, you know, back me up, you know. So the Albanians were his backup. You know, they paid for the truck. They paid for the rental. They paid for this because this guy's a scumbag. And he organized it like I did it. You know, he always blamed somebody else. He was very Machiavellian, very Machiavellian. And he would do anything to get revenge on my father, on me or whatever. So he calls me to the restaurant and I'm over there with the Holmes guys, with these guys that I have from home security, which is very important. And they drive me there and they drop me off. And Momo sees me there and the three Albanians. And he has a rolled up newspaper like this, you know, like a sawed off shotgun. You know, like he had like, you know, one of those Mad Max shotguns, right? Sawed off. And he had that in there and he sees me. And no, not yet. As soon as he sees me, as soon as I come, he's, hey, Punch, how are you? And he punches me right in the fucking nose, right here. Right, busts my lip, like right in front of everybody. This is, you know, there's tables outside, seats outside. This is a nice fucking restaurant. This is between 84th and 85th on Columbus Avenue called Panarella's. And there's people eating spaghetti and linguine and fucking calamari and shit, right? And this guy just fucking punches me. Bam! Right in front of everybody. And I'm bleeding and my lips are cut and I'm like, what the fuck? And then he goes and gets the newspaper because I'm going to retaliate. You know, I had a Spyderco, you know, one of those knives, Spyderco, on my clip. And I'm going to fucking get him now because he just fucking punched me out of nowhere, you know? And he immediately went for this newspaper thing rolled up like it's a fucking, you know, and I'm like, oh shit, he has a gun. You know, I didn't have a gun on me. I'm coming there for a meeting. I'm not allowed to have a fucking weapon.
Right.
There were three fucking Albanians. They jump up. So I fucking, you know, I maneuver and get the fuck up out of there. I'm like, why the fuck did he punch me? Like, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Right.
This guy just punches me for no reason. Just imagine I just meet you for the first time and I just fucking punch you right in the face. You're going to be shocked. You know, and this guy, this is what he uses. He uses the element of surprise, shock, you know, and I learned a lot from this fucking guy. I learned a lot of bad things from him, you know, but yeah. So that's the last time I seen him until he walked in the door like 3 months later when I was doing a heist with these guys. And these guys, they bring him there.
They bring my
enemy.
Do you say they brought him there?
Yeah, they brought him. They brought him to this place in New Jersey where I was divvying up. Like, I just did a heist with these guys. I put these guys on, not knowing that in the background, Momo is planning to fucking get me. So they bring Momo, and I'm over there, like, you know, fucking divvying up the jewelry, the goods, and everything, right?
Right.
Because we just pulled off a heist that night. I'm in their place in New Jersey. I'm still having problems with my dad, you know what I mean? Because of Momo, I'm still like halfway here, halfway there, right? And and what happens is that, these guys, Nenad, these two, one guy's a karate dude, one guy's a boxer, right? So I put these two guys down with me because they're strong, they're athletes. I need strong guys, you know? So I need strong guys to fucking lift bags, you know, jewelry, you know, to take with. But, you know, the stronger the guy, the more money I take, basically. I don't need a weak fucking guy. Because what is he going to take? You know? He's going to fill his pockets? You know, I need guys that can fucking, you know, I need steroid fucking guys. I need guys that can fucking lift like a fucking, you know, like donkeys. Like, you know, that can carry a load. You know?
Right.
Anheuser-Busch horses. Clydesdales. That's what I need. Fucking Belgian horses. That's what I hire. Belgian horses only. And, so these guys were the top of the cream. These guys are athletes. You know, they're fucking 6'2", 6'4". They're strong as fuck, you know, and I don't need anybody else. I said, I got my fucking crew. These two guys right here, you know, one guy's a martial arts expert. The other guy's a fucking boxer, right? And I'm over there and I'm there with one of the guys, right? With Nenad. And this other guy, he walks in with like lunch and Momo. And I'm like, what the fuck? The last time he punched me in the face, right? He wanted to kill me. And he's blaming me, you know, to my dad that I'm doing all this shit and it's him. And Momo sees me and he's like, hey, don't worry. I'm sorry. I punched you. I had to do that because of the guy. I had to put a show on. I didn't want to fucking pay down, you know, apologize. I didn't hit you too hard, did I?
Well, that makes it okay.
Yeah. And I'm like, and he's laughing and he's like, come on, I love you. You're my brother. And he hugs me. He hugs me. And me, he puts my guard down and these guys are laughing. And when Momo hugs me, he puts me in a yoke and chokes me the fuck out. And these guys are duct taping me and putting handcuffs on me. And they're laying plastic out on the fucking floor.
Why?
They're ready to fucking kill me. They're ready to chop me the fuck up. They got hacksaws out. They got fucking, because now Momo and these two fucking guys that I thought they were going to be my fucking dream team, right?
Right.
My MVPs. Momo takes them and says, we're going to take this fucking guy and just get the jobs from him and we'll do the jobs because I had all the keys. I had all the fucking keys to 47th Street. You know, I broke away from my dad. I got my own shit. I got keys to my father's shit. I got keys to everybody's shit. You know?
It's not good.
So now he duct tapes me. He fucking, you know, he drugs me up. He fucking, it's crazy. It's crazy. And he says, you're going to die. They're going to find you like a dead junkie in the Hudson River. They're going to find me in the Hudson River, like with needles and shit in me. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then Mr. Stan's son is going to be a junkie fucking motherfucker. Like, you know, just really like he just, you're dead. That's it. This is your life. You're dead. I'm going to gut you like a fucking, like a fish. And this guy, I seen him do shit, bad stuff, you know? So, you know, I know what he's capable of.
Right.
I know 100% what he's capable of. And that's not one of the people I wanted to see ever. Right. He's the last person. He's like the devil to me. So this guy, you know, he's yoking me up. I can't do anything. I'm fucking losing consciousness. You know, I can't fight back. So I got two. I told you, one guy's a boxer, professional. One guy's a professional martial artist. These guys are not regular guys. I'm much older now, by the way. I'm much older now. This is like, you know, 20 something now. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not still 17. This has been.
I'm like 21, 22. Yeah. I'm already like, yeah, I'm already doing my own thing. You know, like, I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I'm like 21. Okay. 20 or 21, something like that. So he walks in, he yokes me up. I'm about to die. He had me for three days there until I got loose because, you know, they duct tape me, you know, the sweat, you know, from your body.
Right.
Got the duct tape loose, you know, after 3 days and I uncuffed myself. Thank God, because I know about cuffs and I had a paper clip, not a paper clip, a bobby pin or whatever. And I was reversed. And that's how I learned how to pick locks behind my back because it was fucking just, I got out. Thank God. Miraculously, I was saved. And I broke out. I didn't even go out through the front window. I went out through the front door. I went out through the window. Everything was locked, double locked, you know? And I finally got out of there. I called my mom. They had my rental. They were driving around with my rental car. And I escaped. And I went right to my mom's Long Island house. I met her on 47th Street. And I went home to get a gun, to get a 357 Magnum to go kill him.
Right.
And I jumped. She's in Long Island. So now I'm in Long Island. I got the gun. She didn't want to give me the gun. I'm like, give me the fucking gun. Give me the gun. Give me the gun. I got the gun and I go and wait for him because he took all my keys and he's about to do a heist on my father's office, on our office. I don't know which one. We have six offices. So I don't know which one, but I go to the one where we have, you know, I know it's more than $1 million in the safe. Right.
Right.
And, but there's another safe that we have in another office that has even more money. So I don't know which one he's going to choose, but I'm there on 47th Street and I'm waiting. And I was going to do something that I never did before. You know, I was going to kill a man, you know, as soon as I see him, I didn't give a fuck. I had it planned. I was going to pull the trigger as soon as I see him and just fucking pop him right there. And whoever's with him, he just had me kidnapped for 3 days. He's injecting me with drugs.
He's saying he's gonna kill you, right? He was also saying he was gonna dump your body.
Yeah, he was gonna pull my teeth out with pliers. He was gonna torture me. He was gonna cut my toes off. He was gonna, oh my God, crazy shit. So the stuff that I went through, and these guys are laughing. You know, I was dating one of his girlfriends, one of the guy's girlfriends, or one of the girls that he thought he could date, whatever. Katarina, that's the daughter of Nicola Rebecca. And this guy, he was kicking me in the head and everything. Like one of the guys, I made him money. This guy asked me, you know, please help us make money. And I was like, all right, come on. And I said, just listen to me. Just listen to what I, you know, and the reason why they did it, because they said I took two cuts. Yeah, I took two fucking cuts. Once for my mom and once for me.
Right.
My mom is the one that gave me the job. They didn't like that. They didn't like that. They didn't like that. So Momo said, oh no, he's going to rob you. You know, they brainwashed these guys. So in the end of the day, Momo robs them also. You know, when I come out of jail, they're begging for me to forgive them for what they did. You know, that's part two book.
Okay. Well, when you get out of jail, you said you went and got a gun. What happened?
Oh, well, yeah, I got arrested. I got arrested, but not for a body or anything like that. I got arrested because I went after that. I couldn't find him. I was there for a couple hours. I don't know. I missed him. I did not see him. You know, it was a miss. And I went uptown to get some money, to collect some money that was owed to me. And I get arrested with the gun. So I did have a gunshot. I'm in Rikers Island.
Okay.
You know. And
how long were you in jail?
And maybe just like 3 days or something like that, 3-4 days, you know, until they found out and I got bailed out or whatever, because I was on an alias. Was I on a, yes, I was an alias. So I had a gun charge with an alias. And, you know, that's serious in New York, in Manhattan. If you have a gun, it's a felony, and it's a violent felony. This gun was defaced. The serial numbers were off, and
all
points. And yeah, so like, you know, I got a charge, you know, and I, that's, you know, a gun charge. So that's one of the cases that popped up later when I was doing time, this gun charge, you know, it prevented me from doing the shot camp that 50 Cent did.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So this is what threw me out. He was getting thrown out the same day I was getting thrown out for the gun, but he had a pistol, a cap pistol. So he was allowed to do the program. Me, they sent me to big boy prison. You know, so I go to Attica. They send me to Attica, you know, with a 1-3.
Right, but so what happened after you got arrested, you got out, the guy is still, what was his name? Momo? What was his name?
Momo.
He's still out there. Like, what happens with that? Do you go talk to your dad? Do you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Everybody's retaliating. He disappears again. Like, everybody's looking for him, you know. So, yeah, then I get arrested again. Like, you know, I start doing things. Oh, this is what happened. Then, miraculously, I meet Carlos Medina, one of the security guards that I wanted to meet since I seen him, because he's slow, you know, he's a little chunky, he walks slow, like, you know, he's a perfect security guard for home security. And I meet him in a bar in a Blarney Stone. I see him going into a Blarney Stone after work, and I'm over there and I'm flush with cash. I just did a heist last night. I got a Rolex with all diamonds and shit, presidential. And I meet him, I'm sitting next to him at the bar, and I'm like, hey, let me get you a Heineken, let me get you a beer. He's like, sure. You know, he's fucking starving, this guy. But what happened? Oh, that night I did a heist. Listen, oh no, the night or the night before, I think it was the night before that. And I tell him, I said, I got it, I'll pay the tab, you know? So we had like 3-4 beers already, okay? 3-4 beers. I'm already fucking blasted, because 3 beers, fucking, I'm drunk, you know, on 3 beers. And he's just knocking him back and everything. And I'm like, hey, did you find the stuff that I left for you? And he turns around. He's like, what? Like, yeah, I left a bunch of stuff on the floor for you. Diamonds that were like fucking baboons. Did you pick them up? And he turns around. And I said, and I even said the company, I said, Mr. Pearl. And he turns around. He said, that's you? And I said, yeah. He paused for a second and turned around and said, oh my God, I'm shaking. He said, I've been praying to God that I would meet the guys that do the heists on 47th Street. He doesn't know who does them. You know, he sees that people are doing them, but he doesn't know who. And he would always find shit on the floor, because stuff would drop, basically, you know, from the business. You know, it's messy. But it looks like I left it for them, basically. So, you know, people are rushing to the scene. You have cops rushing to the scene. You have firefighters rushing to the scene. You have security guards rushing to the scene. Security guards are the only guys that have keys to the place. You know that, right?
Yeah.
The cops can't get in. Commercial place. ADT, who had? They have the keys. only the security guards. So Carlos is the guy that has the keys that he needs to let the cops in. So if there's a burglary happening on the fifth floor, the first responder is Carlos. He has to come there with the keys to open the door for the police to go in. Remember, it's commercial, so it's very perfect. So I can get away because I'm in a backyard. You know, I'm going into another building from the backyard. I'm not even on the street. Meanwhile, I have my father and other lookouts with walkie-talkies telling me the security guard's coming, the cops coming, you know, the police are there. You know, they're letting me know what's happening. The SWAT team's coming, ESU, you know, emergency service unit, whatever it is. And I would know and to be quiet or to, you know, to hide or whatever the fuck it is that I need to do. So I would have eyes and ears, always a walkie-talkie, right? And always, you know, a guy with me, either one guy or two guys, you know, that's how I work. And these two guys, they would just come and give me tools, you know, point the flashlight, give me the screwdriver, open the bag, you know, that's it. I do everything. You don't have to do shit. Matt, if you want to make $1 million with me, we can do that very easily. All you got to do is just fucking come with me and in 15 minutes with Rich. Like, it's so easy. I'll do a breaking and entering. I'll open the fucking safe. I'll take out the diamonds and we split the shit. And that's it. You're fucking rich. I'm rich. You know, we go our separate ways. Nobody knows nothing. They're never going to catch us because I disconnect alarms. You know, or I do a runaway. I don't even have to disconnect alarms. I can play games with them. I'll take a slingshot and break the windows. That's what we used to do in Manhattan. I break the window of fucking Saks Fifth Avenue. What do they have to do? They have to send a home security guard to stay there until they put up a board. If not, it's going to get looted. So that's one guard out of a commission. I would do that 3-4 times. Now all the guards are out. So I would break into the home security office, go on a computer while they're all out busy. They have their gun rack there. They got their computer. Why would I go there? Because I'm there with the manager of home security. He knows all the fucking codes. You know, he's a dispatcher. So he would log in and we'd shut off fucking alarms. Like a list of 10 of them for next month. For next month. 30 days from tonight. At Friday, 8 o'clock, this one is going down.
And what do you do? You just pay him?
No, he's part of the crew. He's part of the crew. This is one of the guys that I was working with. These are guys that I brought to my father. My father would never hook up with these guys because my father's not American. You know, I'm American. I'm born here. My father's born in the kingdom of Yugoslavia. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
He speaks with an accent. He could never connect with these guys. You know, there would never be a connection like that. Me, I was the nucleus that made it all happen because I brought a fucking home security guard to my father. You know, and that was the biggest gift that I brought him. And that caused us to disconnect alarms, to have information, to get keys, to duplicate keys, and to pillage. And we did what we wanted to on 47th Street. We're the kings of 47th Street. Not only that, we had a safe guy, the guy that creates vaults and safes on 47th Street. If you're going to make a safe or a vault, you're going to buy from him.
So he's able to basically what, get into the safes, or he has the keys, he has a combination, like
he would give me the schematics on how to open the safe.
Okay.
He's the guy. If you forget your combination, you hire him, he would open it for you.
Okay.
The best safe craftsman in the world was with us, and he's Albanian. We're all familiar with Albanians when it comes to crime, right? They're prolific. You know, whatever they do, they're prolific. Okay. Me, I come from a Serbian background. Whatever they do, they're prolific. I mean, just look at Novak Djokovic, the tennis player. That's called enough. That's what my father does. Just look at the basketball player from the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic. He's the MVP. He's Serbian. He's from my country. He's from my town. That's what he has, enough. So just picture guys like that on my crew.
So
I got boxers, I got wrestlers, I got karate guys, I got guys that are athletes, gymnasts, guys that are physically, I got ex-military guys, ex-military. Now I got 100 ex-military guys that were in military, and they know when I tell them that I need this, this, and this done, I can shout at them and scream at them, and they got it. They program that. They're not going to fuck it up. they know what to do.
So what,
and this was perfect. It was a perfect storm.
What was the most audacious one that you pulled off?
The one that I did, and I left like, I don't know, $15 million in cash, $23 million in cash, some shit. Front page on the papers. It said, stupid burglars leave, take 1 million, 2 million, leave 13 or 23 million behind or some shit like that. 1993, we robbed 55 Exchange, the world's largest exchange. I'm going to give you two stories.
Yeah. I was gonna say, how did you get in? How'd you get into that one? How'd you come across that job?
Okay. This one guy gave us this job, the guy that does the safes.
Okay.
He went to them and he was like, you need to upgrade your vault. And he went there a bunch of times and they said they were going to do it. They didn't do it. They were going to do it. They didn't do it. So in the end, they didn't do it. Okay. There was a bunch of bullshit that was happening. And he was very mad and he comes to me and my dad with the schematics, with a file. He's like, yo, go check these guys out. They have some fucking big jewelry. They're always in and out. They're always doing something, you know? So I was like, all right, fine. This was funny. You're going to fucking love this, Matt. Matt, wake up. This is going to be fucking amazing. Listen to this shit. Right across the street from this place, the FBI was watching them for 3 months. They were recording them for 3 months. And the FBI has the recording of me going to the front of the building because I'm on, this is the seventh floor. So there's a ledge on the building. So I got to the ledge from the back and I'm on the front of the building, front of 47th Street. And I'm walking in, open the window, and I get in through the window of this place. This is a huge place. It's like 3,000 square feet. And I find money bags. But wait, I didn't know there were money bags because I didn't take them. Obviously, if I knew there were money bags, I would have took them, right? But what we do is me and this other guy, Edo, we opened two safes back to back. We took $1.5 million each. It's $3 million in diamonds and sapphires and jewelry. It's fucking amazing. I mean, I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. But when I went to go look at the place, I went into one of the rooms and there was these money bags, these draft bags, right? Draft bags, like U.S. mail bags.
Right.
Big ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Each one had $5 million in cash. Colombian drug lords were laundering their money through these Hasidic Jews. They all get arrested the next day. The next day, 13, 14 people get arrested. They all get taken out in handcuffs. All Hasidics. Hasidics. Okay? And in the papers, they were laundering money for the Colombian drug dealers. So this is money. There was like $23 million there that we left behind, that the feds took, that I didn't know. Imagine I took one of those bags. And I went there and I kicked it. I was like, what the fuck is this shit? I'm kicking these bags. And the reason why I went into the room, because I had to use the torch, you know, the oxyacetylene. Well, that's a manufacturing firm. So they have their own bottles, you know, the big bottles of oxyacetylene, oxygen bottles.
Yeah.
And I would just put my gear on it. So I dragged it out of that room, you know, because my shit ran out. I had a little arc kit, you know, with a little bit in it, you know, and the shit fucking ran out. All I had to do is put my gear onto their fucking oxyacetylene, you know, for the torch. Because I opened the safe with a torch. And I had to cut a hole with a torch first. And then I had a Hilti nail gun with attachment that I shot and it broke the inside tumbler and it opened the safe. It was genius. This is the type of safe that I opened over there. But look, I did this fast, man. And they didn't have alarms for some reason. Or I found out that their alarm situation was not working, you know, like it wasn't responding because I tried them again. Like I tried something, I tried a window, I tried something a couple of days before that and it didn't go off. Like it didn't register, you know. I tried to send a zone one or zone two to the company, to home security to see if they got it. But home security told me they're not even in the registry, meaning they didn't pay their bill for months. So something is going on. So I do the job with Edo. I open one safe this way. He opens the safe this way. We're fucking happy as fuck. I'm fucking celebrating. But and the way we left is through another way. We went through the back fire escape, okay, interior fire escape of the building. And that's right. How I got, you know, to my office. But I went in through the front. So the feds clearly see us going in. And they have a camera pointing because there's a hotel. And they have a hotel room for 3 months watching these people. They're investigating them for fucking for this shit. And they have to arrest them, all of them, because why? We did a burglary. So, you know, they had to come in. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, they didn't want to fucking arrest them. They arrested them all. And I didn't know this because I'm now hiding in my... Now, watch what happens. Me and Edo, it's just two of us. Two of us and like two, three guys on the street. And I'm in my office now. What I used to do is I used to lock myself in the office because it's nighttime, right? 3-4 o'clock at night. And I have to wait for like 8-9 o'clock for people to start moving, you know, so I can come out normal and look normal. I don't want to be out there at 3 o'clock in the morning because I'm going to be the only one there, right? So now, so I'm there with my fucking, with Edo, and we're going through this shit. And I'm like, oh my God, we got so much fucking money. This is a huge fucking score. This is amazing. Holy fuck. Like, we did it. And I'm going through these pieces. I'm looking at everything. I'm like, yeah, this is worth $7,500. This is worth $15,000. This is worth $27,000. This is worth $50,000. And then we're just adding it up. And I'm like, we did very good. We did very good. And he's happy because I know the value of stuff. You know, he doesn't, you know, because he's not in the business. Like I was. So I'm telling him, hey man, we made a lot of money here. You know, we have to split it five ways. Me, my dad, the guy that gave us the job, you know, and lookouts and stuff. Right. So now, we're there and my father calls me in the morning, like 9 o'clock, 10, 8:30. He's like, he's bringing coffee. Right. And he's like, do not come outside. What the fuck did you do? Who the fuck did you kill? I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, the place is crawling with feds. I said, what do you mean? He's like, just stay there. I'll bring you lunch. I'll bring you food. So we're not going anywhere. The guy that gave us the job comes there. He's like, what the fuck happened? What happened? What's going on? The feds are everywhere. I mean, they're crawling. They take these people out in handcuffs. Women, old lady, guys, old men, Hasidics, you know, with the you know,
yeah,
the
yeah. Hat, curls,
Jewish
yeah,
the- people. 12, 13 people get arrested like this. They took out all those bags of money. All those bags of money. This was a front page. $23 million that I left behind. Okay? My father found out because it came out in the second late edition. The late edition paper, it was afternoon. They did another printout. Not the morning. The afternoon edition.
Right.
And my father comes there and he hits me in the head. He's like, you didn't look in the bags, you fucking idiot. You know, and he hits me with the paper and he's like, look, stupid burglars leave $23 million behind. I don't know if it was 23 or 15. I just can't remember the fucking number, if it was 23 or 15, but it was like, it was up there. I don't know how the paper labeled it, but that's that was a front paper that stands out. Same building. I did another job and this person that allegedly, well, the only person that lived in this area with his son, got killed by his son. And the guy did some drugs, LSD or something. He went out on the street naked. But what he did was he killed the cat. He killed the father. I think he cut the father's head off and he threw it out the window where we were working.
Whoa.
We were doing a job there. That's Murphy's Law. Me and Jamie Schaefer, this Olympian that worked at the whiskey bar for that's why I met him at the whiskey bar. He worked for Randy Gerber and Paul Montana. And he was the host. He was 6'6", 6'7". He was an Olympic rower for the Canadian rowing team. He has a silver medal. Okay. So now I have an Olympian on my crew. And we're about to pull off this most amazing heist, also given to us by the same guy, okay, that does the safes, right? And this is 55th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue. And we get arrested by homicide. I get arrested by homicide division because they went out there to find the head and they see us, two jerk offs, opening a fucking vault in this, on the ceiling, of, I mean, on the, how you call it? On the roof. Going into, we're in the vault.
Right.
And we all I did is make the hole, right? Cut the hole. And I'm going to go and get two other guys to come in to help me because it's a lot of fucking shit that we had to. We just opened the vault for the whole entire 55 exchange. The world's largest exchange, Matt. The world's largest. Listen to this. The world's largest jewelry exchange in the world. We just opened the vault for the world's largest jewelry exchange.
And you get arrested by homicide.
I'm getting by homicide because there was this guy, the only guy that lives there, lost his fucking shit and killed his dad. and threw the head out the window. And the homicide detectives are coming there to fucking retrieve the head. And they fucking bust us. And I have the article for you. It says, head, cat, and bird found dead in the backyard. Burglars get arrested. It was a crazy fucking story. But that's that Murphy's Law that I was telling you about. And the reason why, because I was too cocky. I had an ego problem, you know, edging God out when you think you're like God because you're doing all these things. Remember, I could open a safe like that. So you have $100 million in that safe. It's not safe for a guy like me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's how I felt. I felt like, you know, I was one of these guys that the same guys that have like 150,000 Bitcoins, you know, today. You know, they feel like they can do whatever they want because they did something in their life. They bought it cheap. You know, they got it for pennies, you know? And that's how I felt. Like, I felt like this little king of New York, you know, that I used to do whatever I wanted to do because I had the diamonds, I had the goods. I made the money. I made things move.
What did the homicide detectives say?
They fucking couldn't believe it. Like, they just could not believe that we were fucking doing a fucking heist during this murder. And they're like, what, you guys didn't see us? And the thing is that because I said I had an ego problem, I had to go get another walkie-talkie, but I was lazy. My father said, you better have that walkie-talkie because that covers that 6th Avenue Street, that lookout. And I forgot to get it. It wasn't charged. Like, I didn't charge it or something. So it wasn't working. A Motorola, you have to charge it, right?
Right.
And I didn't have eyes on that side. So I didn't know that these guys were fucking there. And I thought, you see, because I was there with Jamie, okay, Jamie Schaefer, the Olympian, and we just fucking completed a hole on the roof of this exchange, right? And we're inside the fucking vault. All we got to do now is get the stuff, is go there, you know, go inside the vault and grab the shit, and right? And I see that, well, I have one of those, you know, the battery packs with the light on it? It's a battery, like a big 12 volt, 13 volt, I don't know what it is, like a big battery pack with a spotlight. I have that shining into the hole. And I turn around and I see somebody pop their fucking head out from behind the air conditioning unit. Like this, you know, like, I'm like, what the fuck? That scared the shit out of me. I'm like, you know, somebody's playing games. I'm thinking it's one of my father's friends playing games with me. I'm thinking it's Zoran, you know? And it wasn't. Fucking 13 cops jump up. 13 cops, man. One here, they, I mean, they had fucking, like, it was an assault team. It was a homicide division. You know, emergency service unit. It's the SWAT team. Okay. So when I got arrested by the SWAT team, I got beat up by them really bad. I thought I was going to die back there, you know? And my friend, Jamie Schaefer, the Olympian, he got attacked by the dog and he gets a flashlight, a mag light in his back. They broke his vertebrae or some shit. They messed him up, man. You know, they really messed him up. And I thought, yeah, they pulled us by our ears and they threw us over a fucking ledge. And I thought we were going to die. These guys were not playing games with us, you know, and not friendly at all. Not friendly at all. But you ever get arrested by violent cops?
No.
But you've seen it, right? You've seen people.
Yes.
Yeah, you're lucky, man. Yeah. So I got my ass handed to me by them. But my friend got worse because he got sick by, you know, he got attacked by a dog. And those are two highlight stories that I got to tell you because, you know, one is a murder mystery, right? You know, while we're doing one of the biggest jobs in history, right? A multi-million dollar job. And the other one was something that we left behind, you know, millions of dollars in cash that belonged to the cartel, right?
Right.
And I could have took this shit. I was kicking it. I was like, what the fuck? What is dirty laundry? Like, who the fuck brings this in the fucking, like, what did I didn't understand what it was. Just imagine you seeing 14, 15 bags, you know, huge, you know, those big US mail bags with the, you know, sealed, like, you know, they had the rope around it, you know, and I didn't know what the fuck it was. I was kicking it.
How do you,
I never would suspect it was cash.
How do you ultimately get caught?
How I got caught? By Joe Keenan, this cop, Major K Squad. He came to my office and caught me. When I did one of the, this is how he caught me. I wore blackface to look dark, right? To change my appearance. And when I broke into home security with Munchie, with my partner, I had a Daytona diesel vest, a leather vest, expensive vest, like, you know, Daytona diesel, racing. It's a Daytona diesel, Florida. And looked like Mickey Rourke or something would wear it, you know, one of those. And I had that on, stupidly, ego, during the heist. And they had a video of that. The face, they can't tell because I have a hat, glasses, you know, I got I got black face on, you know, I look Spanish or black, right? I don't look like me. And my partner Munchie, he put on white face. You know, he changed his appearance like he's, you know, anyway, and he put a hat on and a wig, you know, so we look very different, like when we, because we know where we're going to be on video.
Right.
We're breaking into home security, you know, home security office on Fifth Avenue, on 580 Fifth Avenue. And the way we did that, I told you, we get a slingshot and we break the windows. So all the security guards and dispatchers would have to leave, you know, to secure the fucking, you know, the place where we damaged on purpose so we can get in there. So that video damaged me because he seen the Daytona, Florida diesel, red, had the red vest, like it was black with gray and it had like red in the back. And if you see it one time and you're a cop, you're going to fucking remember it. And I walked past him on 47th Street. He was walking into my building, right? In 45 West 47th Street, where my father's at, upstairs. He's walking in and I'm walking out. And I bump into him.
And this is just by coincidence?
Coincidence. And I bump into him on the street, but he's there investigating us, basically. He's coming in, And I bump into him and he turns around. Oh, no, he's leaving the building. I'm coming in the building. That's what it was. He was leaving our building. I'm coming in. I'm with Money Mike, one of my guys. Mike Jones. The only American, pure-blood American guy that was on our crew, Mike Jones. He has like a German background, and he was down with me. He was my guy. And I'm walking in the building, and I tell Mike, I bump into him, and I'm like, Mike, that guy, that's a cop. I know him. I'm telling him, look, that's a fucking cop, man. Those guys are cops. And they left. So they left. So I go upstairs to my father and to my mother. No, my mom's not there. My father and some other, and my father and me, and I don't know who else, and Mike. And I go up there and I tell my dad, hey, I just bumped into fucking two cops. Soon as I'm saying that, they're fucking opening the door. They're breaking open the fucking door. And they pull out the gun, you know, the little 38 special, the way they do it. And they pull out the badge. And I'm over there. I turn white. I fainted almost, you know. My fucking heart went down to my ass, bro. I was like, what the fuck? I knew I was getting arrested. And you know, that's the worst feeling, right? If you had plans that night, it was my girlfriend's birthday or whatever. Right. Well, I was planning to do a heist. But after that, you know, so I had all these plans. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to fucking jail. And this guy arrested me, you know, and that's how I got caught by Major K Squad, Joseph Keenan. And you can Google this guy. This guy's a legend. I mean, he only arrests people that do Pink Panther type shit, you know, crimes, you know, expensive paintings, you know, $12, $13 million artifacts and shit. Like this guy's, he's the guy you call, Joe Keenan, Major K Squad. This is One Police Plaza. They have their own division. They had a division for me. They basically made a division just for us. You know?
So what?
That was one of their biggest guys they got.
Right. So he caught you for just one of the burglaries.
No. I got a stack load of for everything. They blame me for everything.
Okay.
He wanted to put at least like 20-30 heist on me.
So what happened? What did they say to you? They come in.
I was fighting. No, I was fighting. You know, I had Ronald Rubenstein and Nick Carrazzo. You know, and then, you know, I was fighting it. I was going to trial, you know, and I told you, I got a 1-3 for a bunch, for like 5-6 of them put together, you know, and I copped out. I got a 1-3. Actually, I wasn't even supposed to do 1-3. I was only supposed to do 2 months. 2 months. But I did what you did, and I caught a charge while I was on probation. So I caught that gun charge,
right?
The one I just told you, that's the one. That's the one that I was fighting my case. It's from 89 to 94. I go to jail 94.
So I
was on the run the whole time.
So you took a
plea. Different aliases and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So you took a plea because I understand that we've spoken before, but people that are listening to this or watching this don't know what you got.
Right.
So you.
My plea. Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. And what was your plea and how did it fall apart?
My plea. Yeah, my plea was 6 months, 5 years probation. It was ridiculous.
Right.
Okay. I paid attorney 6 months. I already had 3 months in with all that time that I had, like, going in and out. So I only had to do like 2 months, and I would have probably got a time cut. Yeah, 60 days I would have been out. County, easy. And I messed that up because Momo kidnaps me and all this other stuff. And that's how I get that gun charge while I'm on probation. Yeah. For the cases, for Joe Keenan's case and all that, you know, everything came together.
And you went to this, what happened with the shock?
The shock. Well, that's, I went to jail in 94, and then I went to shock. And then the gun charge popped up. They took me out of shock. And then, right. You know, I thought I was going to. Yeah. It was first, I'm sorry. Six months, 5 years probation, right? I messed that up with the gun charge that I caught while I was on parole, like during, not parole, probation, waiting to do my trial. The judge wasn't having it. She was like, look, I have you out here on bail and you mess up again. So now she took back the 6 months, 5 years and gave me a 1-3 mandatory upstate, meaning I have to go up north. They're going to shave my head, you know? And I didn't want to do that. Who wants to go upstate? You know, they shave your head. Do they do that everywhere or no?
No.
No.
In the feds. I mean, I've never been to state prison, so.
Oh, you haven't visited this. Oh, you're lucky. You're lucky. Lucky, no. Lucky, lucky. Of course. Well, you skated, man. You're lucky, man. You're so fucking lucky. You haven't seen the dungeons that I've been in, man. Holy crap. But we'll leave that for another day. But yeah, they shave your head, they delouse you, they do all that crap, you know, and they put you in downstate. From downstate, they reclassify you, and they send me with 50 cents to shock camp. So I'm like, I still got it good. I'm still going to be out in 6 months. I do 5 months out of that, you know, and I'm going to be out in 1 month, and all of a sudden a gun chart pops up, and now I have to do my time, my official 1-3. During that time, feds came, got me. New Jersey came to pick me up. In New Jersey, I blew trial. I was going back and forth. I did. I got 6 years in New Jersey, consecutive or concurrent with my time in New York, and the feds picked me up. And in the feds, I'm facing life because they have me for some arm trafficking, sheriff laws, rocket laws, LAWs. You know what that is? Rocket launchers.
Oh, rocket launchers.
Yeah. A whole container with my fingerprints on it, which is bullshit for the war, because, you know, there's a war that started in Serbia and in Yugoslavia. And they said that I sent these from the proceeds from the heist, that I was buying weapons and sending. That's their charge. Just fucking crazy. So I got Robert Wolf, you know, that was my second lawyer, Robert Wolf. Robert S. Wolf is the best federal lawyer you can get. You know who he is.
So
Robert S. Wolf. Yeah.
You
get very, 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 very important guy. Saved my life.
You get the charges dropped from the feds or what? How does that work?
Statute of limitations.
Oh, okay.
I beat it on statute of limitations. They didn't have enough time to prosecute me on this. So that was good. But I still caught another violent cutting in Otisville. And I was facing 30 years for that because the guy was an informant. He got cut. And you know how that works. So, you know, I beat the case and now I'm facing a violent cutting in Otisville. You know, that happened in 1997. And in 1997... every mobster, everybody that was doing any kind of crime in New York on a large level was arrested in 1987. Giuliani had his reign and campaign. And he arrested everybody that was in the organized crime gangs, drug gangs. You know? That's when RICO started heavy.
So how much time did you end up doing?
16 years and 5 years parole. So 21 years out of my life, I gave it to the system. 21 years.
When did you get out?
16 inside, 2010.
2010, okay.
2010, I finished parole 2015. I had a parole supervision, intense parole supervision in New York. I transferred it immediately because there's no such thing as parole in Florida. They only have probation. So I was living the life here, man. The past, since 2010, oh my God. It was a dream. Like, it's another movie. That's another book. That's part four, basically. But you're going to love that part because I did big things. I did huge things. And then I retired. I retired crying like 2013. I was out. Like I was still doing crime while I was on parole.
Right.
I wasn't a goody-goody until like 2013. So I've been 10 years free of crime. Like nothing. Oh. I can cross the line.
And what do you do now?
Today, I'm a visual artist, like the way you said you chose your path when you came out. You
right.
Chose to, you know, but I sold my first painting for $4,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My paintings don't go for $4,000.
I'm in a gallery. Well, I'm a gallery artist, and thanks to a Layer Cake New York, there's another guy that I'm going to introduce you to. His name is Layer Cake New York. He's an artist, Sean Sullivan. He was also in the Feds, Sean Burbage. Good friend, brother, partner, you know, and he's the guy that got me in the gallery scene, you know, with the gallery people and stuff like that. So he's doing huge things. Yeah. So Layer Cake New York on Instagram, you could find him, me, Punch Approved. You could find me, you know, and I'm an artist today. I do murals. I do freestyle art. I'm a, you know, freestyle artist. So, yeah, I do exhibits. I did a bunch of stuff in Dallas, you know, for the Mavericks, for, you know, for like the stadium over there. And yeah, I like doing this. This is my my speed. I like anything, I like to create. I do that, and I sell baseball cards, MetaZoo cards, and sports collectibles and stuff like that. You know, I'm living the life. I'm living the dream, man. I love it. Author of a book. You know, the right. Next one's coming out at the end of the year, you know, the movie's coming. I mean, so much potential. I'm going to have a part in this movie. If this comes out, I'm going to be Tugan Tommy, the character from Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. I'm going to be the real Tugan Tommy. If I get the part, well, I got the part. I just, if they do the movie, you see, there's a lot of things happening in Hollywood right now that are not, you know, the writers,
strike
stuff that's happening.
It's
we're going back to the 70s again. It's going to be a lot of game shows and, you know, reality stuff. So it's going to be like that for a while, you know, but they're taking a lot of independent people, which is good. So another person I want to connect you with is Steve Stanulis, a former cop that was a Chippendale dancer, a gigolo, like a Chippendale.
Right.
Yeah, and it's The Shield and what was it? Sex and the Shield. That's his story, but he's a director and a producer.
And sorry. Okay.
This guy makes movies. He makes movies, you know, he makes movies and he's a phenomenal guy, man. He's another person I want to, I want you to put in your Rolodex of people that we choose to, listen, our platform is amazing. You have an amazing platform. So I thank you for having me here as a guest. Thank you so much, man. You're a sweetheart. I really like you a lot. Your voice, you're passionate. You're a movie star, man. And I told you that I'm going to cast you in my project. Did I say that?
Yeah, you told me that.
I want you to be a
bartender, or I'll be the doorman.
Something.
I'll be one of the security guards that will be walking around.
Would you be a cop?
Sure.
Would you be a cop? Maybe
make a great cop.
There you go. I think you'd be a great cop. No, seriously, because you have the blue eyes and you got the hair, you got everything, you got all the goods. But I want us to promote. Listen. I want us to do our projects. I want us to promote each other. Our platforms are important. I think your voice is, you're a beacon of light for everyone. And as I said, I commended you. You hit the ground running. Me, I waited. I had to, you know, finish my parole because that's just how it was. But I was doing phenomenal on parole. I need to write a book on how to survive parole, you know, parole or things like that. This is something we need to do. But yeah. So what did we get today? We got the first heist, right? We got the two intense heists that happened that stand out from the rest of the crowd, you know,
right.
That make it pretty unique, you know. And as I said, this is something Hollywood loves to eat. They love this type of stuff, you know, especially elusive characters and guys that go through those doors that we're not supposed to go through. So I just love our lives. And I love that we fucked up our lives and we're not. Today, we're completely opposite of what we used to be, you know. Like today, me, I just want to be a better version than I was yesterday. And that's what I thrive every single day. Is just wake up, give thanks to God, and that I'm still alive, I'm still here breathing, because many of my cohorts, many of my people, many of my associates, they're no longer here. You know, I lost my father recently, last year, you know. I lost maybe 5-6 good guys in the past, 5-6 years, you know. And it's very hard on me because I'm like the last one left, you know?
So listen, I have a question for
you. Yes.
Yeah, Gerald Blanchard was a Canadian. He was a Canadian that was, he was doing credit cards, but he was also breaking into vaults, breaking into banks. And he actually, I don't know where he was. I mean, I'm going to say he was in, I don't know, whatever. It was like Belgium or something, but it wasn't Belgium, but it was one of these mm-hmm. Eastern mm-hmm. European, or, you know, European countries, smaller countries. Mm-hmm. And he was on vacation and he went through a museum. Now the museum was, you know, it was a former castle, because, you know, in Europe, a lot of the castles they've turned into museums.
Yeah.
So he's going through the museum and they show an exhibit of the diamond or something like that. It was this diamond, a huge diamond with a bunch of larger diamonds around it. It was like a pendant, right? And it's, mm-hmm. it was loaded onto a little spring that, you know, inside of a case. Well, he sees it and he thinks, man, that would be he immediately looked at it and said, the only thing that the only alarm system is obviously it's a spring. You could tell it was on a, like, if you moved it, it would spring up and it'd set the alarm. And it's something that was put together probably in the 1970s or 80s. And he sees it and he thought, I'll bet you I could steal that. And he's on vacation. So he goes out and he finds someone. Now he also is a skydiver. You know, one of the things he does, because as I'm sure you know, crime is not
Evie.
What?
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Crime is not a full-time job. So, you know, it doesn't take 40, 50 hours a week. So you usually have other stuff you're doing, right? Like, you know, I'm committing bank fraud, but I'm also doing sculptures and painting. You know, this mm-hmm. guy, you know, I'm working out. Like, I have plenty of time on my hands. So he also skydives. Well, what he does is he gets a pilot to take him out in the middle of the night, drop him over the museum. He parachutes down in the middle of the night, lands on the top of the museum, goes in the side window, super glues the, you know, the little thing, the little spring mechanism, super glues it, takes the diamond, replaces it with a replica that he bought in the gift shop downstairs. It takes them about 3 or 4 days before they even realize that it's been stolen. They find the parachute that he used in a garbage can across the street. And it was several years later when he gets busted for something else in Canada. He was doing, he's breaking into a bank at night. And even his bank jobs were ingenious. He would find banks that were being built. He would go in before the alarm systems were set. He would cut in all of these fake holes and things. And then the night before they went live, he would go in through the ventilation system and he would take all of the motion detectors and he would black out sections of the motion detector so he could drop through the roof and walk through the lobby to the back of the ATM machines. He had already ordered duplicate keys of the ATM machines using the serial numbers because they weren't loaded, so they're not locked. So if you go in before the bank, all the alarm systems were set, he could get the codes, order the keys, and just wait. So he drops down, he would open up the backs of all the ATM machines and pull all the money out, you know, whatever it was, 50 or 100,000, 200.
The back, sure. Oh, they're loaded.
Right, so he gets caught for that one day because the cops know he's doing something and they're following him. And one day they follow him there and they arrest him. When they arrest him, they're like, yeah, you're looking at like 10 years. And he says, what if I could solve a mystery in another country? Mm. They're like, well, what do you mean? He's like, what if I could tell you where this diamond was? And he actually had stolen the diamond, had taken it, and it was in his grandmother's basement, hidden away. And he said, and he had done it knowing someday I may need this. Like, he didn't need the money. So he ends up getting like 2 years, 2 years in prison. But 2 years in prison for a nonviolent crime in Canada is basically you end up doing 3 months house arrest. And that was it. Yeah, and then you're on probation.
It's a slap in the wrist. Yeah, this is amazing. I'm not familiar with the story.
Very much, for some reason, your story really reminds me of that story.
Mm, very cool. Very cool.
He's got these.
And you said the guy's name is again?
His name was
The Art of the Steal. I know this.
Gerald Blanchard.
Gerald Blanchard.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of those movies. One of those stories that when you read the article, the whole time, all I could think of is this has to be a movie. And it's the same thing with yours. The whole time you're explaining this, it's like this has to be a movie.
Yeah, it's something that if I could tell you, like authors, any author that hears the story, I mean, it's very hard to explain in 1 hour. I mean, we have 50 years worth of heists and stories like this. It's not just one. Most people only have one heist or two heists, and they make a movie or a book about it, which is okay. Me, I did this day in, day out. This is my full-time job. I woke up in the morning doing heist, and I went to sleep doing heist. And it doesn't matter if I was in jail for all these years. Even the 3 years that I was out, I did more in my 3 years than people would do in their lifetime.
Right.
Because I worked every day. And people can't understand how I did that many, because they're like, how many? I did, I've lost count. Okay.
Right.
It's something that I love to do. It's something that was done when from wake up to night, and then the planning of what my week was going to look like. This was a phenomenal time, and it's a small period of my life because I did get arrested. Other people weren't in jail; they didn't get arrested.
Right.
And they got lazy. Me, I had to do the time, and then. My bid was broken up twice, two bids. The first one I did 7 years out of that 1 to 3. Okay. And I came home to no parole. And that's when I really turned it up with everything, not just burglaries, credit card fraud, and selling of narcotics and all that other stuff. Like, anything to make money. I got involved. I was enthralled, entrenched into that lifestyle. And that's part two of the book.
Hey, I appreciate you guys checking out the interview. And if you are interested in Punch's books or any of his social media accounts, I'm going to leave them in the description box. So check them out. And I really do appreciate you guys. Appreciate you guys watching the interview. Thanks for watching the channel. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell so you get notified. Leave me a comment in the comment section. And also share the video with your friends and family. That really does help. I really do appreciate it. Also, I have a Patreon account. I would appreciate it if anybody interested in supporting the channel wants to join. It's like 10 bucks a month. That's not a lot of money. Anyway, I really do appreciate you guys watching. Thank you very much. See ya.